Hello and welcome back to the Frontline Security Podcast. With me today is a man who is responsible for training thousands of security professionals across the UK. And you might recognize him from many of our YouTube videos. It's Anthony Milner, the director of QualHub. And today we're going to be talking all about Anthony's journey in the security industry and all about security trainer courses. In particular, the new refresher training courses and how technology is changing the industry. Here's what's coming up.
Who's the likely person to get there first? If there's somebody injured, it's probably part of the security team.
What appealed to me was getting paid to be there rather than be there, kind of help out when things got bad anyway, and then not get paid.
Genuinely speaking, you have no idea who else is in that classroom where their opinion on you has already been set by your behavior up to that point.
I mean, what is the main difference between the top-up qualification and the refresher qualification? So, Anthony, first of all, thank you for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's jump right in, shall we?
Sure.
So, what made you first start working in security?
To be honest, I mean, long and short of it is, I was working in security. I'd kind of fallen into a job in the UK where I was working cash security, looking after a building rather than actually doing the collections or anything like that. And at the same time, I had a housemate who had a friend come and stay with us, and they worked at a small bar club down the road. Not quite down the road, quite far down the road. And I used to kind of drive them there and back. And eventually I just started working as well on the doors. So this was before SIA and licensing was really established. So we didn't have licenses in those days. It was sort of very early 2000s at that time.
Yeah. And what part of working on the doors appealed to you as opposed to what you were doing currently?
Essentially, I mean, I was already there anyway because I was the lift. So because I was there anyway, what appealed to me was getting paid to be there rather than be there, kind of help out when things got bad anyway, and then not get paid. So, driving force was probably getting paid more than anything because I was there anyway. So that was kind of the start for me.
Yeah. And I mean, that was going back, 20 years?
More than that now, yeah.
More than
22, 23 years, yeah.
So what other roles did you work in besides doors, or was it mainly just door work?
It was mainly door work. There was a bit of close protection stuff. I did what was at the time called a bodyguard course. It was a long time ago. Again, prior to SIA licensing on it. And then we had, through some connections, there was some work overseas, but not really anything that we can go into detail on. But and then I kind of expanded later. Actually, I was already training this stage, but I then expanded into control room as well for council. So working as a surveillance officer, as well as doing their training for them as well. So there was that element as well. But primarily it's doors and surveillance are the two sort of main areas, yeah.
Do you have a preference between either one?
Very different. So with doors, there is overlaps. There's still understanding of human behavior and being able to look at people and read their body language, because two things that you have in common is in a control room, most often you don't hear anything. You're only going to see the visuals. So you're going to get very good at reading body language cues. And then in nighttime economy, it's kind of similar because you're in a nighttime environment. It's noisy. There's a lot of music. And you're, again, looking at people. You're not able to hear. So you're kind of building up that body language cue reading as well, because you don't know if someone's just getting animated telling a story or is there something about a kickoff. So you've got to get better at kind of differentiating between those two things. But other than that, I mean, working in a control room, it's more relaxing in certain ways. You're sitting down, it's warm, you're not standing in the rain or in the cold or anything like that. So it is quite different, and it depends. I mean, but at the same time, the nighttime economy can be fun. So, I think they've both got their merits,
yeah.
Both good.
We often suggest as well that if you already have your door supervisor or security officer license, it's good to get your CCTV license as well. What would you say the main benefit is of having both?
Again, employability. So a lot of places today that you work at, even in security guard work with a door license, You are likely to require both, because they might have a control room that they want you to go and work in and then carry out a foot patrol. Well, you're going to need both licenses to do that. So just gives you more employability. Plus, when you're looking down adverts for work, you know, if you've got one license, you can only look at those jobs. If you've got both licenses, then you can look at all the jobs. And I always recommend the door supervision and the CCTV are great licenses to have, because you've got that massive flexibility with a door supervision license where you can work where all the alcohol is served and consumed. So you've got the nighttime economy, you've also got festivals, you've got all of that sort of summer festivals, winter events. You've got all of that available. And then, of course, you've got the CCTV as well, and you can also work in the control room at those events as well. So you just got that extra work available for you.
Now, I mentioned before that you were responsible for training thousands of security professionals across the UK. Is thousands accurate?
Yeah, I think I've worked it out once to around a 10,000 mark. And that's because, one, I've done it since 2007. And also the classes were quite different in 2007, 8, 9, all the way to 10, actually, where there were some changes. And I'm sure we'll go into the changes, because the SIAs evolved a lot and the courses have evolved a lot. But in those early sort of days, the courses would run with much larger classes. So you could have 100 people in the room. Now, today, I would look at that and say, was that conducive to good learning? Probably not. It was more of a lecture rather than an interactive course. But the course was very different then as well. And what was required from candidates was a lot less than what it is today. And we will go into those changes. But it was a much shorter course, and requirements were a lot less as well. It was all theory, basically. It was no practical or anything like that.
And what made you first get into security training in the first place?
For a start, I worked for a security training company. I sort of, again, just in life, sometimes you have plans, but happenstance happens and you end up somewhere where you weren't necessarily planning to be. So I ended up at this training company, and I was kind of more running it than training at the time. It was about 2007 time. And I would always be in the class, because there was a lot of sort of admin stuff that we needed to get done with all the candidates, paperwork and all of that. So I would just sit in the class, and we would have not a lot of trainers, maybe two or three trainers, and probably only ever sort of one at a time, because we didn't have that many courses. So it was just have the same guys. And then I would sort of take over on the final day just to kind of do a little bit of revision and stuff like that with the class. And over time, I was lucky in the sense that I saw a lot of courses, a lot of trainers in the time that I was kind of picking up what they were doing. And I just started to take over, and then you'd have a guy call in sick or something. So I had the quals anyway, just as a backup. So I would just kind of fill in from time to time. And the more I did it, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed sort of giving them the slide information, but then the realities of working in the environment as well. And I've always enjoyed that. And I've also enjoyed learning. So if I was teaching a subject that I wasn't 100% sure about myself, I would always go, let me go learn about that and research it, so that the next time I teach it, I would be much more equipped with any sort of question that could come up. I would have done loads of research on it, so I could go, right, let me tell you about this, blah, 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 and go into it. And I've always been like that. And I still am today. I still am often looking at what else can I learn? What else can I expand on? It was, again, a little bit less than today. So it was today there's a lot more requirements to be a trainer. Because we're, you know, going through getting trainers all the time, there's a lot more hoops for them to jump through than there were back then. You could do the quals back then. And I had plenty of experience, but you didn't have to go through proving and getting references and all that kind of stuff. So it was just easy for me to just kind of slip into it slowly, sort of throughout 2008, and then sort of from that period on all the way through to today, I'm still doing it. Not as much as I used to, but I'm still doing it actively at least once or twice a month now.
I know when you first started, especially you were still working in security alongside teaching these courses. What would you say is the main benefit of becoming a security instructor?
It's like you asked me earlier about the difference between CCTV and DS. It's different. And if you enjoy firstly, you've got to have a sort of a, an enjoyment for it and a passion for it, number one, because you're taking the next level of person, the person coming into the industry who's looking up to you, and you really want to kind of give them, you know, enthuse them and give them the boost that they can go out. And I always sort of explain to people, you know, these are steps you need to take. You need to be sure of yourself. You need to go out there and, you know, show yourself to the world and all that. Don't expect them to come to you. You've got to go to them. So I enjoy doing that. I enjoy getting people kind of interested and fired up and positive about it. With the Doors, unfortunately, I was retired. I wasn't doing a lot towards the end. I did my last Door in 2012. It was a private function, but I had an incident with my eye, which caused me to lose the vision in my left eye, which puts you a bit on the back foot. You're not, you know, I'm not able to see sort of here, which is a danger to me, to my colleagues. So I kind of made the decision at that point to step away from the frontline door work purely because danger to myself, danger to colleagues. And I thought, I just don't want to get something to happen to the other eye and then I'm not going to have any eyes left. So so it was 2012 when I stopped, but I was working simultaneous to training. And you go through stages of training more and then working a bit, and it's good to keep your sort of yourself on the front line. But as I said, unfortunately, in 2012, I had to stop doing that for health reasons.
Yeah. Can we talk about the incident?
Or my eye?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Do you wear contact lenses? Because if you do, you probably want to stop listening. So basically, I could tell you an awesome story about how I got glass in the face or something, but that would be a lie. Essentially, what happened was I had a very rare form of infection, which is caused by an amoeba, which gets into your eye through water or sand. It's called an acantho amoeba. And it basically is very hard to diagnose because so few people get this. And it's exacerbated by the use of wearing contact lenses. So because your contact lens gets between your eye's defense, essentially, which is its tears, which defend your eyes. There's no blood or anything at the surface. So it can burrow in real nice. And essentially, it destroyed my cornea. So I had to have a corneal transplant. And because you have a corneal transplant, your vision's pretty much toast at that point. That's what happened. So, did it happen overseas? Which is always the question I get, is like, oh, that didn't happen in this country, did it? And I'm always like, yeah, it kind of did. So I wasn't overseas or anything like that. It was here in the UK. Just be careful. Make sure you don't take your contact lenses out if you're going to go swimming or anything like that. Because one thing you'll notice if you ever go to an eye doctor or ophthalmologist, you'll notice they all wear glasses. Not a single one of them is wearing contact lenses. And you're like, what is that telling me?
That's why.
So there you go. So that's what happened.
Yeah, I think everyone was probably expecting a lot more exciting
Sorry about that, everyone. I meant there was a gunfight and yeah. I caught one with my eye.
But, I mean, yeah, it's a good lesson to anybody who does wear contact
yeah.
lenses.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. Because I mentioned there you're the director of Qualhub.
Yes.
So talk to me about Qualhub. What is Qualhub?
Sure. So Qualhub, we're basically like a quality assurance. What we try to do is we try to take the sort of set standard by the SIA and we try to make it higher. So our own standards, increase those standards. And that includes who we work with as far as trainers are concerned. So we have certain standards that myself, it's not just me on my own, is my colleagues as well. When we interview people, we look at the history, we look at how they present in an interview as well, which is important. It's a lesson for everybody listening as well, is when you go to an interview, this be your best self. Dress up, dress smart, because this is possibly the only time you're going to spend with somebody who's making a decision as to whether you're going to work with them or not. So how somebody presents, that's very important. The material, I make all the training material as well, so all the books, the slides, all of that kind of stuff. Again, we're always tweaking that, trying to make it better. We're working on some exciting things for 2025 as well, again, to improve, make the training environment better. Because so with the training, you're caught a little bit in a situation where the course itself, we don't have any control of what's in the course. The course is set out by the SIA and the awarding organizations, make sure you're doing it correctly. So the lesson plans, all of that, I have very little control over. Start times, end times, break times, all of that, it's kind of set in stone. You know, that's what you have to do. But what we try to do is create the most exciting and engaging classroom we can for candidates coming on that course. And use of technology is a step in that direction. And as well as obviously trying to make things greener, so use of less paper, faster, quicker results for the candidates, more efficient for the trainer, because there's a huge amount of admin now. As I told you in the beginning, it wasn't so much. Now there's tons of admin for the trainers to do. And again, we just keep trying to make that more bearable for the trainers, training providers, so they don't have to be bogged down in paperwork. They can get on with what they're paid to do, which is train the course, get the candidates having the best time they can have and learning the best that they can. So that's kind of what we do. And we do also do the compliance side of things as well, making sure that the courses are run compliantly. I've got a team of people that work with me for that, including visiting courses. We do sampling of videos, all that kind of stuff as well, to again make sure these courses are run compliantly. And then on the flip side, obviously making the courses as engaging and fun as possible as well.
You mentioned there that you don't have any say really on what happens in the course.
Yeah,
what happens in the classroom? Sorry, it's all set by SIA.
Correct.
But do you have much collaboration with the SIA in terms of like, look, this just doesn't work?
Not really. We would like to have more input, and there is a change coming in 2026 where I would love to at least have an audience with the SIA when they're designing and scoping these, just for some input on the realities of certain things, where it can look good on paper, but when you take that into a classroom, the reality is quite different when you work with candidates, especially when time constraints are added, like how long something should take, where you go, well, okay, that's fine on paper, but in reality, it's actually going to take much longer than what you're saying. So that kind of thing, I'd love to do that. And hopefully with luck, we will get some kind of, or I'll at least be able to kind of give some feedback, because it's not like I've just walked into this. I've been doing this for a long time and I'm striving to better it. So I would like, I think I have some information I could share and sort of work with, just to kind of, you know, this is a subject matter. Okay, that will take that long. This will take this long. Should we include that? Should we not? You know, that kind of thing. So I would love to, but currently as it stands, no, I've never had any direct input with the SIA as to what is in the course and how it runs.
And overall, think about from when you first started working for QualHub, working with QualHub, looking at how the classroom experience is and the door supervisor courses, how they are now, mm-hmm. to where they are now.
Yeah.
How would you say they've improved?
So material-wise, I spent a lot of time building the material. So there was a sort of a time when I first came on with QualHub, which is about 2016, so nearly 10 years, 9 years ago, where, again, the standardization wasn't there. So you'd have different people using different sets of slides and all of that. So you didn't have that same set standard. So a few years ago, I think 2019, I rewrote all the material. So produced that and basically sort of said, hey, everybody, that's our material. That's what you use. To standardize, so that if you're in Newcastle or if you're in Portsmouth, doesn't matter, you get the same exact material. And then, of course, there have been some changes as well, which I think we'll discuss later, but there have been some changes in the qualification in 2021. There was a big change in the qualification. So then I rewrote all that material. Having already done the 2015 material, it kind of gave me the baseline and the understanding how to write the material. So I reproduced that. And then we've had more changes coming up, which I'm sure we'll discuss as well, which again, every time you do something, you can get better at it. And we're also always open to feedback. We can tweak things, change things, add bits. I've got colleagues of mine who are ex-police who kind of expanded on some bits for me and helped me out and said, hey, you know, on this slide, it says that, but actually, you know, I was working the police for a long time and could you expand that to say this, this, and this, be more clear? So I would go and do that. So, you know, it's a very collaborative sort of work where we're working with everybody, and we work with a lot of trainers. So there's a lot of expertise there because they come from background, a lot of ex-police, lots of ex-door staff, ex-military. So we've got like a good mix of people, and they've all got their potential bit of knowledge that they might help build this awesome deck of slides. And we're looking also to add more interactivity in the class as well. Sort of interactive quizzes, that kind of stuff is on the horizon. It's in our kitchen getting cooked at the moment by our tech guys. But again, it's just keeping people engaged. They are long days. They are long days, no getting around that. And you want to keep people kind of engaged and awake and alive. And you don't want it to turn into death by PowerPoint. So a good way of doing that is to kind of at the end of each chapter, here's a quick quiz. And then let's play a game with that. Let's use the fastest and who's got the highest score and all that kind of stuff. It just turns it into, it's the human nature starts to kick in and everyone starts, it turns into a competition then and everybody wants to have a go and see how they're doing. But on the flip side, the data that we get from that and the trainer gets from that is they can see if anyone's sort of lagging behind or anything like that. So they can then maybe say, hey, let's relook at this or relook at that section again. And also you've got... some technology that we could use as well that we'll go into a little bit later.
So you mentioned there that the SIA, they're constantly looking at ways of improving the courses, how they ran, and they're introducing new courses as well. So back in 2021, they brought in the top-up training, and now they've just introduced the refresher qualification. So can you talk to us about the refresher qualification and what it is?
Sure. So this is actually the third time they've introduced a type of refresher. So if we go back in time to 2010, the course changed in 2010. So we had the original sort of 2005 qualification, which was the one I mentioned at the beginning, super easy, two modules, done. This is for door supervision, just as an example. And then in 2010, it had a large change. So that's where the physical intervention came in. So we went from 2 units to 4 units. With practical training as well. And that carried through 2015. There was another change, which wasn't really as big, more of a sort of evolutionary change to that one. There was a couple of extra bits added. So not a huge change 2015. And then the 2020 qual, because it's every 5 years that the qual gets updated. Oh, we had COVID. So COVID was a factor that caused the delay of the 20 qual to become 2021. Because there was people prior to 2010 that had the qualification and never done physical intervention, they needed to be brought up. So the first type of refresher course that was brought out was called the upskilling. So upskilling came in I think, 2012, and then everybody who'd done their course prior to 2010 never did the physical intervention, they had to do upskilling. So that carried through, and most people had done it by about 2017, 2018 time. So it kind of fizzled out because everyone had got it or they got the 2015 qual by then. And then in 2021, the top-ups came in. Similar vein, similar thing, because the qual had changed again. It went from, door supervision specifically, had gone from a 4-day course to a 6-day course. And then that 6-day course had a lot more to it than the original. So again, to bring people up to date, the top-ups came. And then those are kind of coming to an end, end of January. They're completely done because most people either would have done their top-up, which, again, they were either renewing their license off an old 2015 qual, so renewing their license and then having to do the top-up, or they'd done their qualification after April 21, so they got the new qual. They didn't need to do it. That's coming to an end now. But the SIA, and by the way, the 21 quals also brought in mandatory first aid requirements as well, which weren't there before. A lot more sort of technical stuff on our side, the training side of having to record a lot of stuff, which wasn't there before. Some questions we had to ask during physical intervention that wasn't there before. So it evolved. It became a 6-day course for door supervision. So now the refresher course is for everybody that did their course in 2021, or either the new qual or the top-up, because part of it is like first aid. First aid expires after 3 years. So the SIA is going to have some way of knowing that everybody working in security has still got a valid first aid. So the refresher takes care of that element because, again, the same rules apply. You've either got to have a valid first aid or and that first aid's got to have 12 months left on it, or you have to do a first aid as part of the course. So that kind of brings that in line. But there's some other elements. There's a new element in the door supervision refresher. So there's two refreshers. Let's do that. So there's two refreshers. There's security officer refresher, which is 1 day, and it's Not changed huge amounts. Searching instead of radios now. They're doing searching, practical. Actually, there was no practical before in the security officer. It's a one-day qualification. They do searching, practical. Everything else is e-learning, so they have to do their e-learning before they come on the course. And then they'll get one exam at the end of the course. So they'll do practical assessments, and then they'll do the exam. That's security officer. Door supervision's 2 days, the refresher, and they're going to cover a number of subjects on that. They've got to do the ACT certificates for both. Both have got to do the ACT certificates. That's the Terrorism Act, Action Counters Terrorism, which is not hosted by us at all. It's by a third party. But they've got to have that. So that's this, their terrorism training brought up to date. Then there's also in the door supervision, we've got the spiking, which is a new section, which was added to the door supervision training about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago. It was an addition where now it's officially added. So it's a bit more expanded again. So that's quite a big part. And then, of course, physical interventions. The other element of it is, of course, for door supervisors, they learn physical skills. And like anything, they need to be refreshed or you're going to forget them. You're going to have skills fade. And another thing that can happen is laws can change. So when you did your course originally, some of these techniques, maybe they're not legal to use anymore. Unlikely, but it could be. So you just need to be brought up to date on that because you're 100% when you're working, if you do something and hurt someone, you've got to be able to justify your action. And if your training was a long time ago, you might think that you can justify it, maybe you can't. So that's another element of it. So that's the sort of refreshers that are coming up. They're live now, and everyone will need to do them. So potentially every 3 years. That's not clear from the SIA as it stands, but it's potentially every 3 years.
Okay. Potentially.
Potentially.
So what would you say, what is the main difference between the top-up qualification and the refresher qualification?
I think... For the doors, there is, if we break it down, radios have been taken out, searching's been brought in, spiking's been brought in, terrorism's still there, keeping vulnerable people safe is a new section, there's a couple more bits to it, but they're not huge, they're just more like they're refreshing their knowledge on what they should know already. Spiking is brand new, as I said. And then the PI is just refreshing your skills on physical intervention, which you should do regularly anyway. So that's kind of your differences there.
Yeah. I mean, spiking's quite a big one, really, yeah. Isn't it? Because I think especially over the past few years, it's massive.
So, yeah, with spiking, it's been around since I remember spiking when we were working and we had certain things in place to protect customers against spiking, whether it was basic stuff like unattended alcohol was always taken away. People would be given, I remember we had these little bottle stoppers that we'd give people so that people can spike drinks. It was very difficult, by the way, in reality, it's very difficult to see someone being spiked because of the environment you're in. It's dark. You can't really see it. It's the behavior after that you're looking out for. So that's covered as well in the new section, what to look out for, what should kick off your sort of spider senses to say, hey, that doesn't look right. And again, it's that going back to sort of behavior, you know, looking at body language, understanding like what's happening there, understanding the behavior of someone who's coming to a venue half an hour before who was perfectly fine, who can now barely stand up, you know, that kind of tell. So having that officially in the course is a really positive thing. And again, spiking is, as I said, it's not new at all. It's been around for a long time in many shapes and forms. I mean, essentially, people need to understand is if somebody orders a single drink and they get given a double without their permission or consent, that is classified as spiking. So even simple things like that, which maybe friends don't, you know, I slipped a little extra into his drink, you know, as a joke, whatever, that's illegal, you know. So getting that understanding also across is super important to people to understand the law, where the law stands on this. But as I said, it's not a new thing, and we had it in the door course added in. We already had keeping vulnerable people safe, so we did kind of discuss it a little bit. Then it got expanded on the DS course, and now it's quite nicely expanded on the refresher course.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier as well about skills fade. And mm-hmm. one thing that I'm glad that's still in there is the first aid qualification. It's refreshing everyone's first aid skills because, as you know, security professionals are usually the first people on the scene of any emergency.
Yes. And something that we've always done going back to 2008 is we always would run first aid as an option for people who wanted to do first aid on the courses. And that comes from that exact point, is who's the likely person to get there first if there's somebody injured? It's probably part of the security team. So you really should have that skill set. Absolutely, I'm really happy that it became mandatory. I'm happy that it has to be refreshed, because like any skill, if you did a course 6 years ago and now something happens, how are you going to remember what to do? So it really should be refreshed. And it should be refreshed. I mean, yes, your certificate is valid for 3 years, but I always think like annually refreshing yourself is not a bad thing. And if you can do it and you can afford to do it, or your company can pay for you, it's not a bad thing. Because then when something does happen, you are going to be within 12 months of having done a course and being up to date entirely on everything.
Yeah, 100%. So to sum up refresher training, what do security professionals need to know now? Everything to do with refresher training.
The first thing is who needs to do it and who doesn't. I think that's important, especially while we have this kind of bleed through of both. So currently, what can be confusing is we've got the top-up courses that are still live till the end of January, and then we have the refresher courses that are also live as of the 1st of October. And I just want to make sure people understand who needs to do what. So it's quite simple-ish. If you did the original April 2021 qualification, so you did your qualification in April of 2021, then you don't need to do a top-up. You will need to do a refresher qualification instead. So essentially, don't do a top-up course if you did your qualification April or later 2021. Or if you've already done a top-up course, say mid-2021, you need to renew and you did a top-up course then, you don't need to do another top-up course. You need to do the refresher course. So that's who the refreshers are for. So anyone who's either done the top-up already or has done the April 2021 qualification, that's who that's for. If you applied early to get around doing the top-up originally and you're essentially still holding a 2015 qual, please do the top-up, because we have asked the question and we haven't got clarification as to what would happen if you do the wrong thing. So I can't give you an answer today. And I have asked multiple times, what happens if I'm due to do a top-up but I accidentally do a refresher? Does the SIA allow me to renew my badge? I don't know. I've asked the question and we haven't got a response yet. If you're unsure, contact Get Licensed when you're booking and say what you've got, what your qualification is. I've equipped everybody there on the sales side, on the customer services side, with all the information. So they should be able to give you a very clear answer. Right, you got your qual then, you need to do this one. Now, for the refresher, it's highly recommended that you do it when your license expires. It is mandatory, i.e. you will not get another license if you are renewing after April 2025. However, I would suggest that the demand will go up and things like, you know, prices can increase because it's just market driven. And also there's one other element. If you renew early to get away from doing that, that's fine. But what about your first aid? Because legally you still have to have your first aid. So you need to make sure that your first aid is up to date. Now you might as well, it's probably the most efficient way, cost-wise, time-wise, to just do both at the same time. Get your refresher done, get your first aid done, and then just get through, and then you're done, you're happy, and you can renew your license when it comes up. As long as you've got the qual, you don't have to renew your license the next day. You can still renew when you need to renew, but at least you've got the qual now, and that's going to be valid through to the time when you need to renew.
So again, if anyone is confused about which qualification to take, either contact Get Licensed, or you can leave a comment under this video as well, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to technology.
Awesome.
So you mentioned a few things that especially QualHub are doing to improve the way courses are ran. So tell me a little bit about the QualHub app that's just been launched.
Sure. So, I mean, we've got, we're always building more stuff. So we've got the push towards paperless. So that we introduced actually not that recent. It was actually launched in December of last year on the door supervision courses. And again, the idea behind it was kind of twofold. It was partly towards the trainers who had a huge amount of paperwork to do. If you imagine, you know, 20 people in your class, you've got to mark English assessments, you've got to mark unit one sort of pre-learning assessments, all of that stuff. It takes a lot of time. You know, getting photographs from people, putting it out, filling out paperwork. There's a lot of admin. So we wanted to streamline that. So that was part of it. And I think the app working brilliantly towards like really streamlining things. And on the other side is you've got the exams. And of course, paper exams need to be put in an envelope, sent to the awarding body, marked by the awarding body, and then the results come out. And of course, if you imagine 50 courses all coming together, it depends where yours is in the queue as to when it's going to get marked. So when you do an online exam, you know, your results are going to be there that day. You're going to get those results. So that's, for a customer point of view, you know, obviously the stress of doing an exam is one thing, but then that further stress of waiting for the results, you know how it is, you're sitting there waiting for those results to come out. So we're trying to take that stress down. Now, it doesn't mean they can apply for their license the next day, because they still, there's the other practical elements that still need to just go through, be collated and so on. But, you know, people are generally ready to apply for their license if they finish on a Sunday by probably Tuesday or Wednesday the following week. They can get on with their application. And I will give, you know, kudos to the SIA here, because their turnaround time is really quick now as well. So, you know, people can within a week or two of doing the course have their license. It does, you know, caveat here is it does depend on how complex your history is. Like if you've lived in one house for the last 5 years, it's going to be much quicker than if you've moved around and all that. They've got to do a lot more checks then. But so that's from the paperless side. It also saves huge amounts of paper being wasted. Like the amount of stuff that's just printed and then put in a box and stored for 3 years and then destroyed, it's phenomenal, especially as you scale it up and you've got multiple courses running. So on that front, it's saving, you know, paper as well. And it's more efficient. But then it's not just those elements. The candidate doesn't have to bring a photo because it's all digital. They take a photo, upload it, job done. So there's none of these having to pay. I mean, those little passport photos have become ridiculously expensive. I remember it used to be about £2. Now it's like £12 to get a, you know, you can only get like seven or eight in at a go where they need one. So again, it saves them the hassle of doing that.
And many candidates always forgot them.
Correct. So you don't have to worry about it now. You don't have to worry about the photograph. It's on your phone, done, dusted. So that side, from the candidate's point of view. The other thing is that they just use their own phone. So we've built the technology so they can't cheat. They just use their own phone as opposed to using sort of tablets or anything else. And it's been working awesome. We launched in December last year. It's gone out to most courses. CCTVs on the cards. It's a little bit more complex. We're still playing around that because of the practical assessments and what needs to be done there. But we're building that. And that's one part of it. Then we've got the first aid app, which again is just solidifying how seriously we take the compliance side of things. We've got like it's evidence-based, so the trainer, again, on their phone will have the app. They'll be able to photograph the person doing the assessment, you know, whatever it might be, chest compressions, AED, whatever it is. They take a photograph as evidence that gets stored against that customer's profile, etc., so that, you know, when we issue a certificate, we've got all that evidence. And again, it just makes the trainer's life easier as well, because they don't forget anything. It's all in front of them. The order of assessments standardized again, because that's the order everyone's going to do it in. So that's great as well. So we're continuously, and we're always tweaking and making it better and adding functionality on after feedback as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier as well that the app's improving the customer experience. We can then test their knowledge after certain modules and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
With like interactive quizzes.
Yeah, so that's something that we're still working on. That's in the pipe. The questions and everything are ready. It's a case of building the technology, because we want to build good technology. There is stuff you can use, like third parties, but we actually also want it for data, because it's also really helpful to see, oh, across the board, 50 courses ran, everyone was a bit weak on this section. Okay, do I need to look at the slides in that section and see if I need to add something, make something better on there? It also helps the trainers because they get to see if somebody's weak in their class, motivates the candidates, turns it into a fun game so they can kind of have a little competition in the class, winner can get something. So it's going to be, it's going to really help kind of re-engage the class as well.
Yeah.
So looking forward to the launch of that, which will be probably early next year.
That's very exciting. And of course, we have the GuardPass app where candidates can complete their e-learning, they can do mock exams, they can even find work, they can create their own CV and find jobs. But apart from that as well, you're also heavily involved in the CCTV simulator. So can you talk to us a little bit about the simulator?
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting one because that came out of a need that we had. We used to use a lot of streaming software, which obviously needs internet. And we had a number of cases where the internet would drop for some reason and the trainers couldn't carry out their practical assessments. And a disaster because you then have to recall candidates and do it again and so on. And something that's difficult to do at scale is control how good the internet is at every single location that you're using. It's impossible to do that. So I was looking about, I guess it was 18 months ago, I was sort of thinking in my head, how do we get around that? So I went to one of my colleagues who's our sort of genius when it comes to these kind of things. And I pitched an idea of a CCTV simulator. And I sort of had it in my mind what I wanted. And this, again, came from just years of doing the assessments. And I knew what I needed it to do. I then clarified with the awarding organization that it would be happy for this because obviously it's not going to be live video. It's going to be scenes that will play out and look like a CCTV control room, four cameras. There's going to be things happening that people have to do. And I used the assessment checklist to make sure that we had everything happen. Most importantly, all the videos are stored locally. So that means that there's very little need. There's some security need for the internet just to log into it. But beyond that, the streaming isn't coming from somewhere else, it's coming from the laptop. So that's really changed the game. And then out of that, we started getting interest from outside parties that had come on the course, seen it, and wanted to use that technology for their own internal training. That was very interesting and unexpected. And we've got a couple of clients now who actively use it for their own in-house training as well, because they can plug their own training videos into it and then use that to carry out their drills, whatever they want to do, where they are.
I mean, again, it just makes it so much more engaging for candidates trying to learn how to use it instead of just talking to them about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a requirement that they do the practicals. But when you do it at scale, like, look, if you're running a training provider and you've got like a place that you are and it's your fixed location, you can put cameras up and you can kind of make it work. But when you're running courses across the country at scale, that option is not viable. And I've tried lots of options, by the way. I've tried having people, take CCTV cameras with tripods and, set them up. But the thing is, CCTV cameras aren't designed to do that. So they're quite finicky, the little wires, and you try and click them together and the next thing is a wire breaks and then you're stuck again because the camera stops working. So we tried everything. And in the end, this was the best solution. And it works really well with the criteria that we have to hit as well, because we made sure that all the criteria were there. Whereas if you've got a camera set out there just in a car park, well, you've got criteria to hit. What if no one walks past there? How do you, now what? How are you going to track someone? So we have all of that done because we had actors come in and carry out all of the scenarios for us.
Now, outside of training, obviously AI and tech's just evolved massively, especially over the past couple of years. AI's mad.
Massively, yeah.
But Elon Musk launched those robots, what they called Optimus robots.
Yeah.
What do you think of those? Do you think potentially they could take over security professionals?
I think we're fairly far off there. I'm impressed, obviously. I mean, Elon Musk, what he does, whether it's SpaceX, Tesla, Optimus, he's got loads of projects running. So incredible work that he does. I think, anybody that tries to tell you they can tell, especially these days, more than a futurist that tries to tell you beyond beyond even nowadays, I would say 5 years, they're making it up because they literally, we can't, you know, trying to predict 5 years, especially with technology as it is, you just cannot do it accurately. You might get some things right, but when you get to the 10-year mark, you definitely can't. So I wouldn't like to say that there's, you know, those things, they're like 20 years away. I don't think so. I don't think it's that far. I would say it's possibly outside of 5 years because it's mainly about production and cost, isn't it? That's what it comes down to. You've got to get, firstly, those things to work exactly how you want them to. But secondly, it's also about cost of production and getting them to a price range, which is not the same as buying, you know, a Lamborghini, buying one of those robots, because I don't know what they cost, but I suspect they're probably not cheap at the moment. So from a company point of view, if you would say, I'm going to get robots to do the job of personnel, you'd have to calculate your costs. And cost of you or me, human beings doing it, we're going to cost you over a period of time, whereas the robots are going to be an outlay initially. That cost has got to be weighed up, doesn't it? So if I've got to pay £1 million to get 4 robots, it's going to take a hell of a long time for you and me as paid individuals to kind of equate that cost. So I think in the beginning, we'll probably have that cost on our side. But over time, who can say?
Yeah. I think the main thing is, it's like, can they still do the same job? Because a lot of like human interaction, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Can robots do that?
As I said today, no. But tomorrow, who knows, man?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Well, I'm sure we could spend a day just talking about robots taking over, sure. Taking over the world. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. But one final question. What advice would you give to anybody turning up to their course on the first day?
Okay, so a couple of things I think is important. Number one, present yourself well. Genuinely speaking, you have no idea who else is in that classroom. Don't worry about me as the trainer. You know, impressing me is fine, but actually there could be other people in that classroom who are running security companies, who are project leads in very big security companies. You want to make the good impression with those people who you don't even know are there. So you could be, it's almost like you're doing an interview, but you don't know you're doing an interview. So if you dress smart, you're going to stand out because, you know, people come to those courses, they don't normally dress up very smart. They might turn up a little bit late. There are requirements with the SIA. So number one, make sure you're on time. But, you know, being a little bit early is a good thing. Dress smart, present yourself, give your best, be your best self, I think is what I would say. And you really are, it's kind of self-promoting, aren't you? You're trying to promote your best self. But also on the other side of that, ask questions, try and learn. You know, you're all there for the same reason. The reason is to get the qualification, to get the license, to get the job. That's what everyone's for. But at the same time, use the time you've got, because once you've done that course, next time you're going to be involved in those situations is going to be in real life. When you've got the license, and then you're going to be thinking, oh, what do I do here? You know, so really ask the questions where you don't know. There's no such thing as a silly question, especially as trainers. We've seen them all before. And I really take time to make sure the class is comfortable in understanding that I'm not going to berate anyone for a question. I'm going to try my best to answer that question and be as give them as much knowledge as I possibly can, because that's what we're there for. Otherwise, you could just watch the slides yourself. What's the point? So that's what I'd say. So be your best, ask questions, try and make the most of the time you got there.
Yeah, fantastic advice. Again, you just don't know who's going to be on there. That someone might be offering jobs.
Absolutely. And yeah. It does happen. It does happen in courses as well. You get people on there who actually go, yeah, I run a security company. They might not say it right away as well. Mm-hmm. They may not mention that until 2 or 3 days in, where their opinion on you has already been set by your behavior up to that point.
Fantastic advice. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. That's all from us, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks very much.